Okay, we are on. We are on. Rusty here with Dave Ross, live from Switzerland. We call it Switzerland because the more we talk about the All Blacks and New Zealand, the bigger they become. So, live from Switzerland. Mate, great to have you on the pod. How you doing, mate? You all right?
Yeah, very well, thanks. Very well. Sorry you had to get out of your bed so early to catch me on the time difference.
No, 7 a.m. is not early, mate. 7 a.m. is late. I had a 3:30 last week and a 4. This will be the latest I've been up in a long time. But, mate, it's awesome to have you on. Obviously, we've touched base a lot over the last kind of year or so and been watching your story and what you've been up to, and I've been really enjoying it. So, well, maybe just share with people how we've got to here. What's the stuff that means that you are a Scotsman lost in Switzerland?
Yeah, true. Yeah. So, really fortunate. 2017, I arranged almost a kind of bit of a dream personal development trip across to spend a month with the Crusaders as part of their international high performance unit. So, that's a kind of coaching course, if you like, that they run, but they also do a kind of player exchange, academy exchange type program as well. So a number of Scottish coaches have been on it, Gregor Townsend, and Duncan Hodge, Mikey Blair, etc., over the past number of years. And it was always something I was really keen to get the opportunity to try and go. And in 2017, managed to convince my bosses at University of St Andrews, where I was working at the time, to help facilitate that. So went across there and just absolutely loved it. Kind of fell in love with the country, fell in love with the people, how engaging and open and welcoming they were. And obviously spending that month with the Crusaders when they were on a winning streak on the way to their first Super Rugby title for a number of years was just almost, from a kind of coaching point of view, was a bit of a life-changing experience. And I think more than anything, I wanted to kind of get a couple of personal goals out of it. And one of them was a bit of kind of coaching feedback. So I delivered some sessions with the academy, with the Canterbury Academy stuff, and got some pretty good feedback off of John Haggart, who was heading up the program. He now works for the Black Ferns as an assistant coach. And Brad Moore as well, who's the assistant coach in the Crusaders. So they gave me some good feedback on some of the sessions I was delivering, and they said, "Hey, listen, you know, you could do well out here if you wanted to, you know, come and chance your arm." So that pretty much, that's what I did. I decided to come across here in 2018, just coaching in South Auckland and in Kinnes Manukau, and was there for 5 months before I actually got offered a job to become director of rugby at King's College in Auckland, which is one of the big private schools here in New Zealand. So it's probably the kind of, well, most kind of prestigious school from an academic point of view. It's kind of seen, I suppose, a little bit of equivalent of like a Harrow or an Eton or something like that. But you know, from a rugby point of view, that's it's a high standard of rugby. So kind of been thrown in the deep end there, and just learning every day and enjoying it immensely. So yeah, it's been a bit of a whirlwind kind of last year and a bit.
Mate, where do I sign up for this course that gets me a job in New Zealand? It's that's pretty cool. And what was it? So when you went over to the Crusaders and spent a month there, what were you seeing, what were you feeling, what were you experiencing that made you fall in love?
I think, to be honest, the environment was just, it was just so motivational. I think that was the big thing. Like, you know, obviously we're excited to be there as a coach from Scotland, being in New Zealand and spending, you know, time with probably the best rugby team or club in the world. But then, you know, when you got in there, you were excited, sure. But then it just took to another level. I think, to be honest, Scott Robertson was the big raiser, was the big reason behind that. The environment it creates, everyone just loves going to work. They, you know, they love being in that environment. They love coming to training and doing their gym and being in the team room and being in each other's company. And I think that he is the leader of that group. I can see why they've been so successful, because, geez, like, you know, I've not played rugby for years and years and years, but I was like, geez, I'm so motivated. I'd give it a go if they really needed me, kind of thing, you know. I was like, put me in. And
what type of stuff? Give me some examples of stuff you've seen.
Yeah, some examples.
Obviously, we've all seen, and I show the breakdancing on a lot of my presentations and go, wow, I would want to be coached by Razor.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Well, the first thing, like, first and foremost, we had a bit of kind of common shared experience where he actually said that he was like, oh, I used to play in Scotland. And I was like, no way. When he was like, yeah, I was 18 and I went on a gap year. And yeah, I ended up playing for Ayr Rugby Club. I'm like, geez, no way, that's unreal. And he's like, yeah, I used to get £50 for every try I scored. So I never used to pass. So, you know, he was like, you know, that was a kind of straight off way. Kind of, you know, he really enjoyed his time in Scotland. So what he does is, I think you kind of maybe talked about it in some of the other pods that I've listened to before, but I suppose a bit more detail. They theme, Scott Robertson themes his campaigns. So he tries to, the group that he's working with, he tries to find similarities in terms of the journey that they're about to go on, or maybe some of the things that they're trying to achieve. And he relates it to maybe things that have gone on in history before. So for an example, like he was coaching Canterbury and I think they were going for their sixth title, Mitre 10 title or NPC title. And he likened that story of that particular season to Michael Jordan, Chicago Bulls, trying to win six NBA championships. So all their terminology and all their lingo all relates to basketball and the Chicago Bulls. So you change, you know, they would change all their calls and they wouldn't really have, you know, their stereotypical rugby calls or frame, you know, framing in and around, you know, the story they're telling. He actually, you know, uses a different story to actually motivate the group to try and achieve what it is they're trying to do at the end of the season. And when I was there 2017, they were doing their story was in and around Muhammad Ali and regaining the heavyweight championship of the world.
Yeah,
so all their terminology was in and around boxing. So for example, they would, you know, there was the runners off nine were jab runners. Their out the back door pass was a hook. Then they had, you know, so they were, you know, using their calls, but they were framing it in and around the story of boxing. And then the man of the match, for example, you know, one of the weeks I was there, Matt Todd got man of the match, and he got to sign a pair of golden boxing gloves. So he got given them as like a reward, or, you know, like a presentation for man of the match, and he would sign the boxing gloves and they would get hung on the changing room door as a sign, you know, that, you know, every player would get to the opportunity to do that if they were the man of the match, and just all things like that. So, you know, to paint a picture of that, you know, the terminology and the theme, the story captured my imagination, and, you know, it definitely captured the imagination of the players as well, because it was something different. It was, you know, these professional players or whatever, probably I've seen, you know, quite a lot of the same things year after year after year, but definitely working with him, he just makes things different, exciting, you know, really engaging. And more so than anything else, I think as well, he passes a lot of the ownership across to the players. So the players drive a lot of the things as well.
And how would, so, and I've heard, you know, so many great stories and some other cool ones there from, so obviously Sean Marsden and Mark Irish, they went over and they spoke a lot about the theming. They said he rocked up every day in his towel, having been surfing, which is clearly fueling all my biases as well.
Sure.
How's that compared to what you're, you know, so the other stuff you saw? So we've had lots of conversations around, there's bits of rugby in New Zealand that doesn't look like, you know, we might have imagined it looked like. So, I mean,
sure.
What's going on at the schoolboy level? Because clearly some decent players coming out of it.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, obviously speaking to friends and stuff back home, they're all like, you know, oh, well, what's it like and why is New Zealand so good at rugby and things like that. I think first and foremost, you know, ultimately it's their national sport. So everybody, you know, all the kids when they're growing up, you know, pretty much most of them are playing rugby as their first sport. And the ones who are good have aspirations. They all want to be an All Black. So, you know, that's one of the fundamental reasons that they are good at rugby. It's just the same as what, you know, in Jamaica, if you're a young kid growing up in Jamaica, what do you want to be? You want to be an Olympic sprinter.
I thought you were going to say bobsleigh. I thought you were going to say but yeah. Sprinter as well.
Yeah. You know, everyone wants to be Usain Bolt, you know, and that's because it's their national sport. And I think as well across here is one of the things that they are so good, and the pipeline of schoolboy rugby is so good across the nation, is they have so many different ethnicities to select from. So you have your white Kiwis, you have your Maori Kiwis, and then you have the Polynesian Pacific Island influence, which is absolutely massive in New Zealand as well, and particularly in Auckland. So you've got kids and athletes from Samoa, Tonga, Fiji, Cook Islands, etc., who, from a genetic point of view, are really early developers. So Auckland, that Auckland schoolboy rugby that I'm involved in here, you know, we play weight-restricted rugby for some of our lower grades. So I'll talk about that in a little bit more detail later. But the Open First 15, you know, is dominated by Polynesian kids. There's very few what you would class white athletes or white kids playing schoolboy rugby in Auckland. It's predominantly Pacific Island and Maori students. And because they're such early developers, you know, we've got kids in our first 15 here who are, you know, majority forward pack will be over 100 kilograms, no problem at all. And some of the front row boys will be in and around 115, 120, which is absolutely huge at 16, 17, 18 years old. So if you think about that kind of Polynesian factor and the Maori factor, plus, you know, some really good, you know, white Kiwi athletes as well, they're selecting from a really wide, diverse gene pool. And the cream of the crop just really does rise all the way through, and their systems are really good. So you go from schoolboy rugby selected into academy at under-19s. You'll play an under-19 provincial tournament. So Auckland, Waikato, Canterbury, Otago, etc. will all play against each other. All the 14 unions will come to a central venue and play against each other. And then from then you'll play New Zealand 20s. And potentially, you'll get the best of the best will get signed into either provincial union contracts and or Super Rugby contracts after that. So with 14 unions all producing an under-19 team that, you know, is a pretty darn good team, they've got a lot of talent to choose from. I think that the pipeline, you know, everyone's like, well, why is it so good? It's not that they're doing anything different. It's just, you know, in and around national sport being the main focus, and also in and around, you know, the pathway just being really, really clear, really simple, and having lots and lots of pipeline of players coming through.
Cool. Well, and interestingly, I mean, you talking a bit, I think your school's had is definitely starting to have more success. What's the stuff you've been doing there that's had impact? I know we chatted offline a little bit around the fact you're trying to change the philosophy there. Do you want to kind of expand upon that a bit more?
Yeah, so when I started here last year, I think the systems were just, or the systems in terms of the traditions of what was going on, how teams were selected, how training was conducted, and then, you know, when the teams went out and played, it was almost just by accident rather than design. It's like, there's 22 kids, there's a coach, off you go and play. So what we've tried to do over the last year is align our philosophy. So we've got now a school-wide playing philosophy, so that from first 15 all the way down to our seventh grade, which is our youngest kind of kids in the school, we're all trying to play a similar brand of rugby. So that, you know, as the kids move through the school pathway, they are working on the skills that they need to play our particular brand of rugby. So because we're a private school and our role is quite small, we've only got 9 teams, for example. So some of the other Auckland schools may have 16, 17 teams playing every week. We've only got 9. So we have to, you know, try and make best use of the players that we've got. So we're trying to work on key skills that are identified throughout the whole of the program, and then playing a particular brand of rugby so that as the players move through the pathway, they are I suppose, well versed in that style of rugby to eventually hopefully produce a strong first 15, you know, year in, year out.
What is your brand of rugby and what are the skills you're talking about?
Yeah, so we looked at, skill-wise, we've looked at our catch pass, individual tackle technique, our offload and support, and we looked at ruck clearance. So some of the terminology might be slightly different, you know, depending on where you're from. But what we're obviously trying to do is get the coaches inputting into that process as well. So they've helped identify those skills as evasive running as well as a skill. They've come up with those skills in relation to the style of rugby we want to play. So we're quite a small team in comparison to some of the other schools. So we would want to play definitely a wide offload, high tempo style of rugby, where we're definitely trying to play to the edge quite a lot. That's a real buzzword in and around just now, isn't it? Playing to the edge. I don't know if that's the same back in the UK, but we hear that all the time. We basically get the ball wide, get to the edge. So we want to play definitely on the edge as much as we possibly can. And we want to try and obviously have all the players working on all those skills at near enough every training session. What's happened in the past is that the kids would come along to training. They would do maybe half an hour worth of line-out practice, standing in a line, getting the same ball thrown to the same, you know, front, middle or back jumper. They would maybe pass the ball off the top and have a little bit of a run, and then they would reset the line-out and they would go again, whilst the backs ran a strike move or two or three strike moves. And then they would come together, they would run their team run against nobody, and that's training finished. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to change that mindset from set piece and team runs to actually working on skills and playing under pressure.
Cool. And how's that been? So, I mean, I envisage that lots of New Zealand rugby or Switzerland rugby look like that. I'm guessing that there's a lot of informal stuff that's happened before they get to you in terms of some of their development. How's that been?
Yeah.
You influencing the other adults. So what's been your strategies around that? What's been your tactics?
Yeah, so I mean, you know, I'm saying to some of our coaches, for example, like...
Especially when you're not from Switzerland.
Yeah, exactly. It's tough with a Scottish accent and ginger hair to get some people to listen to me from a rugby point of view. But, you know, I'll say to some of my coaches, you know, what are some of the reasons that we're not working on our skills at training? And like, oh, the boys have got a really good skill set, so we don't need to work on skills. And I'm like, well, yeah, that is true. Their skill set is good. And but they think that basically just the informal games that the kids will play, you know, they'll play touch rugby, or some of them will play full contact rugby during like break and lunchtime at school. So they'll be out, perhaps, you know, when the kids are back in the UK, when I don't know, when I was growing up, I used to go and play football all the time. So if I was playing football, I was working on my skills and, you know, learning about the game. Where else across here? Because as we've talked about earlier on, it's a national sport. Everyone's playing touch rugby or, you know, full contact rugby breaks and training and stuff. So they're getting a lot of that kind of informal learning, that informal skill development through just playing social games against each other.
And what are they? And have the adults dealt with the Scotsman with ginger hair?
We're getting there. It's definitely a process that's taking a bit of time. I mean, ultimately, what I didn't want to come in and do is come in and try and just change everything straight away. So I wanted to learn how the school operated, learn, you know, build relationships with our coaches, you know, almost kind of gain a little bit of trust through, you know, me offering to deliver sessions, which, you know, they were more than that. They were biting my hand off for me to come in and deliver sessions. And I would go in and I would deliver the way that I would normally deliver. I'd play a lot of, you know, games, conditioned games and constraints-based games. And then the feedback from the players was, oh, that was brilliant, sir. Can we get that again? And then, you know, immediately the coaches start to say, well, hold on a minute here. boys are really enjoying this. You know, maybe I should start coaching a little bit through more games. And that's where, you know, it's been a kind of slow evolving process. It's still not by any stretch of the imagination near complete, but it's definitely on the way to gaining some good traction. So, you know, we're only 2 weeks into our season just now, but already I've seen our coaches are trying to coach a lot more through games, which is really important.
Nice. And what's the level of sharing like? So obviously you would have some, you know, you would know Clarkie, who's been on the pod and coaches the Sevens, and obviously now you would have some connections around Crusaders and Scott Robertson, and then I saw on Twitter recently Wynard Ellis, who I think you met through Twitter, was over with the Lions, so you get to hang with them. I mean, what's your experiences been around sharing and learning off other coaches in the last kind of 2-3 years?
Absolutely immense. I think that's one of the big kind of cultural differences that they've got across here that I didn't really experience much back in the UK, and that's the willingness to share and be open, and for me to, you know, for example, pick up the phone and ask, oh, is it okay if I come and watch the Blues session tomorrow? And they'll be like, yeah, no worries. We're training at, you know, 9:30, and you come. So, you know, I've been really, really lucky. I've spent time with the Blues, Crusaders, as I mentioned. I've been down and watched the Chiefs. I've been at Counties Manukau with their Mighty 10 squad sessions, Auckland with their Mighty 10 squad sessions, and then down, as you mentioned, with Clark with the New Zealand Sevens as well, and the Blackthorn Sevens too. And they're just really are. They're so open. They're happy to discuss what they're doing in practice, what they're trying to build within their environment, what their values and behaviours are as a group. And they're really, you know, just open and honest. There's no, you know, we don't want to share that with you.
Why do you think that is? Well, I mean, because my experiences would be that it'd be pretty similar in England up until about 18. And then beyond that, there'd be lots of environments that think that they are changing the world, or they've, you know, discovered America, and would be much less willing to share. So what do you think they see the benefits of this as?
I think one of the reasons is I don't think there's a massive amount of coach education that goes on from the kind of point of view where, you know, in the UK, and I'll talk about Scotland a little bit here, is like the coach education structure in Scotland, I think, is absolutely fantastic. They've always got stuff on for coaches to go and watch, whether it's a mini workshop based on, you know, coaching at that level, or they might do an attack masterclass that Mikey Blair or Gregor Townsend delivers, or a defence, you know, workshop, or strength and conditioning workshops. And there's always stuff in Scotland, no matter where you are living in the country, to go and observe and learn from. Whereas here, they don't have like a calendar of events like that. They don't have, you know, all right, we've got, you know, Alama Ramia is going to be delivering a workshop on attack, for example. And I think because they don't have maybe that workshop or that kind of CPD type calendar, then they get quite a lot of requests to go and watch training, or, you know, they get, you know, coaches wanting to learn. So how do they do that? Well, come and watch our sessions, and they're quite open to that.
Yes. And if you want to watch the session, I mean, how engaged are they in you being there? Are they asking you for feedback? Are they,
you know? There is actually, there's a bit of that going on, you know. An example of which, you know, a guy called Semo Sotiti, who played for Samoa.
Yeah.
Captained them and played in a number of World Cups. He actually played for the Border Reavers back in Scotland, and he was living in Gala Shields.
The Border Reavers, good memory.
Yeah, I know. So he I think actually his kids are got quite Scottish names involved in there as well. So yeah, he delivered a defence session. He's the County's Manukau Mighty 10 defence coach. And he finished the session, he came across to me and he goes, what feedback do you have for me? And I was like, you know, just wow, like really? Are you asking me for feedback on his delivery of the session? And I gave him a couple of bits of feedback just in terms of what I saw. You know, for example, like none of the players during the session missed the tackle. So I said, well, have potentially the way I would look at it is, have you put them under enough pressure that they're actually getting better at tackling if nobody's missed one?
Yeah.
And he went, you know, it was a bit of a, yeah. And then, you know, he went away and we actually ended up going for a coffee and talking about it a little bit in more detail and stuff like that. So, you know, they're definitely open for feedback. You know, Brad Moore in and around the halfback stuff that I did with the Crusaders, we would do halfback mastery every Wednesday morning at 8:30 in the gym. So, you know, for those four sessions I was in with them, you know, he immediately after the session, he'd be like, oh, what did you think of those drills and practices? Have you got any different ones that you, that you know, that you would work with, or any different, you know, practices that you would do to work on maybe follow through or hand placement or, you know, arrival to the ruck? And, you know, they're always just open and just always wanting to learn and get better.
That's pretty cool, isn't it? I had the same. So last week I was with GB Hockey at Bisham and watched Danny and Russell coach, and he's done all right for himself, Danny. He's won an Olympics. But the first thing he did after the session was come over and go, right, let's, what are your observations? What have you noticed? And we probably had about a 40-minute chat around some stuff. And, I mean, it could be as simple as that, exactly what you said. Well, lots of defence coaches think that lots of players making all their tackles is good, whereas actually, is it stretching them? Are they learning? What's the, you know, as coaches, we often could do well to think of ourselves as problem setters. Maybe the problems just aren't hard enough for them at the moment.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, I spent some time with the Lions from South Africa last week. They were in town and great meeting up with Wynard Ellis, who's the assistant coach there, and spent a bit of time with him. And I actually, we had this conversation in and around. He said, oh, hey, listen, I'm by no means an expert. I've got so much more to learn. And I said, mate, you're working at Super Rugby level, you know, one of the, you know, the top teams in the competition. You are, in my eyes, you're an expert coach. But the fact that you have a mindset that you don't think that you know as much as you could or you should, or you're always wanting to learn and grow, that's actually a sign of expertise within itself.
Yeah, no.
And it's always the top coaches who are always asking for feedback and always wanting to learn and gain more knowledge and just, you know, any little bit of, you know, snippet of feedback that they can get to improve themselves will ultimately go and improve their players, and they're hungry for that. And I said that to him, you know, when we were having a coffee last week, and that's really refreshing to hear, because, you know, too many other coaches, I think, in and around that novice coach or the kind of intermediate coach, they're not as hungry for feedback as the expert coaches are.
Yeah, we had a hockey event last night and Alan Gormley was there. And I don't know how old Alan is, so I'm going to hypothesise that Alan is in his late 50s. I'm not that good at it. However, he was the hungriest person to learn there last night. And I was thinking, wow, like a hockey legend.
Sure.
He must be older than me because he invented walking hockey, and that's just really refreshing. I love the fact, you know, that Alan still doesn't think he knows everything, whereas lots of people, you know, they might think they know everything. I just wanted to go on.
No, I was going to say, like, I think, you know, maybe people that know me on the podcast that will listen to the podcast and know me might maybe resonate with this. But I think probably about 8 years ago, I was probably in that space of I thought I knew more than I did.
Go on and tell me, give me some words to describe Dave Ross in 2011. If I come to watch you and you'd said, Rusty, have you got some feedback? What would I be saying?
No, I think it wouldn't. I think I was always keen for feedback, and I think that my sessions. No,
but what words would I be using to describe your coaching?
Yeah, that's a bloody good question. Actually, I'm going to have to.
My job.
good mate. Yeah, well, no, you're earning your money this morning. Well, I had an example.
I'll give you some context. I'll build rapport, and I'll be vulnerable myself. Whenever I have conversations with coaches that my wife overhears, she always says to me, Don't remember. Don't forget, sorry. You weren't always like you are now.
Mm.
He's pretty good at giving the feedback.
True. I think that if I had probably a number of years ago, I would deliver a session or my game plan for the team that I was working with or wherever that was. I think if someone came and gave me feedback, I'd be like, nah, we're doing it like this because of this. And I'd be fairly resolute with my rationale or my reasoning, or I wouldn't be maybe as open to feedback as I am now, or maybe look for it as much as I possibly do now. Yeah. I think that I thought I was a better coach than I was probably. And the example, and I'll be really vulnerable here. I'll share a story with you. I actually had on my CV that obviously a CV applying for jobs or roles or coaching roles, I had expert attack coach on the CV.
Sorry, I couldn't laugh. I feel,
I'm laughing at myself now, because to have that, to think now of the first of all, just the arrogance, but the self-confidence, but at the same time, even now I am so far away from that right now, and I'm a much better coach than I was before. But to have that on my CV, like whatever, 6 or 7 years ago, it's just, it's laughable, as you say. And do you know the person that shot me down on it was Scott Johnson from Scotch Rugby.
Was it?
I sat in a meeting, that wasn't a pleasant experience. But I sat down with him and he's like, tell me why you're an expert. And I was like, I'm this and I'm that and I know this and I know that. And he's like, nah, that's bullshit.
I sometimes feel a little bit jealous of, so I get to meet lots of coaches that believe that still. And there's a little bit of that where, so the challenge now for people is that it is vulnerable to go, bloody hell, there's lots of stuff I don't know. And then you peel back the wallpaper and the walls are crumbling and you think, I see lots of coaches that are really, really getting better. But actually, you get often focused on the bits you don't know, and that becomes quite a challenge. And sometimes I look at some of the people who believe they're experts, and there's plenty of them around, and they'd never experienced that because they are so resolute that they know everything, that they never have to peel back the wallpaper. They imagine the wall is unbelievable behind it.
Sure. Yeah, 100%.
I want to go back. I want you to tell me that. I want you to give me, what three words would I use to describe your coaching 8-9 years ago? If you'd observed yourself now, give me three words that you'd have gone, right, Dave's coaching is A, B, and C. I want to know what A, B, and C is.
Let's go for organized. I'd go for one, organized.
Cool, I'd have that.
I'd say I'd ask questions, but they'd be really open and really to the whole group. So, tell me, boys, what could we do better? Now, if you're asking 15 boys that question, it's not really getting to the crux of good coaching points or, identifying one or two key things that we could get better at. It's just really generic.
Communication is not good, Dave. That's what we can always do better. Communication.
Communication, yeah. Oh, no, you're not allowed to say that. Depth. Oh, yeah, depth is another one, yeah. It needs to be deeper. The other one, I'd probably say, I'm actually, and I still have this trait, is I'll stand and watch a lot, but ultimately I think that's a good thing. Like, I'll observe a lot through training. So you won't necessarily hear me, I'm not a big shouter, for example. So I'll watch. I think that's the thing. When you coach through games, you're going to watch quite a lot. But I think that standing and watching, you're actually gaining, obviously, that information. But then you can't go in and then ask really open, generic questions like that if you're actually taking that time to observe what's going on in front of you.
And that's a brilliant skill to have, and I think it's possibly our most important skill. What type of things are you looking for? So lots of people struggle with this. The game's going on. They feel like they need to coach. They actually need to be more comfortable doing exactly what you said, actually being intentional around where I stand, what do I notice, how do if I'm coaching with you, Dave, what are we both looking at, what are our biases? So tell me what you've found out about kind of, let's call it, noticing.
Sure. I think the big thing, you know, is you'll see different types of errors. You'll see skill execution errors, and then you'll see maybe tactical or decision-making errors. And I think the big thing that I've kind of learned to do is, you know, is not trying, and as you say, step in and coach every single time you see an error. So you've got to let those errors potentially play out. And I suppose what I'm looking for is trends. Yeah. So I'm looking for trends. Is it a handling error? Is it a, you know, ball and contact error? Is it an individual tackle technique error that keeps on coming up? Or is it, you know, something like not using an overlap if we've got one on an edge? And why? You know, and trying to understand as to why. And if there's the trends, then that would give me the information to go in and start questioning potential players or groups of players or individuals as a result. I think I really like the coaching tool of the freeze, the blow the whistle and everybody freeze.
Yeah.
Just so to help paint the picture. And that's one that I use a lot, and I try, and if I've ever done kind of coach education or coach mentoring or wherever that, I'll try and, nudge coaches towards using that, because I just think that that's such a great tool. It's blow the whistle, freeze, and then you can talk and walk through things just to paint the picture and get a little bit more clarity and detail on what it is either that we need to improve or change, or this is why things keep happening as well, is an important one too.
Nice. Yeah, freeze, replay would be good for me. We would coach well together, because the stuff you're looking for is the stuff I'm not that good at looking for. So I'm generally, I love highlighting all the good stuff. And then sometimes you might come up to me and say, Rusty, I don't know if you noticed, but that player's had 12 successive skill errors around this. And I'll be like, I hadn't even noticed it, Dave. So,
sure. Yeah. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? Like, you know, that's where you've got a working and coaching team that balances out, you know, so you're working more in and around that positive, the good things, what we've seen that's really, you know, effective and successful, whereas I'm, you know, maybe more looking at the analytical, what do we need to fix? And I think that's really important, because if you have two Rusty coaches and two Dave Ross coaches, then they wouldn't actually work well together as a coaching team, and you're not actually getting the best of the kids.
So how are you, well, let's go, what's your favourite snack at coaches, the coaches' social?
Oh, yeah, so I saw that tweet came in from a good mate of mine, Mike Stubbs. He's coaching out in Sydney just now. Yeah, there was this place in St Andrews where we used to coach together and work together, and it was called the BBQ, and they did an unbelievably good double cheeseburger with fries with a side of macaroni cheese. Can't beat that on a coach's show. Absolutely sensational.
And so this was you guys getting together, chewing the fat on coaching. I mean, how has that worked for you? And have you been trying to bring it over to New Zealand?
Yeah, 100%. It's something that I'm really big on. You know, as a lot of my roles has been in and around head coach or director of rugby. So you're kind of the lead, if you like, of a coaching team or a coaching group or a program. And I think as the leader, you know, going on things like coaches social, which is basically, you know, can be as informal as grabbing a coffee or, you know, a pastry or whatever in the morning. Or it could be, you know, something that we did in St Andrews quite a lot, or back in Scotland quite a lot, is, you know, go for dinners together after training or after games or wherever it may be, and just spend time together. And I think that is really important, because you actually get a lot of informal chat in and around either what worked well, what didn't work well at the session. You can talk in and around some of your players and how they're going, how they're developing or what they need to work on. And I think as well as a leader or as a head coach or someone in a position of responsibility, you know, it's a really good thing to do just to galvanize the team and almost do, you know, there's a little bit of a reward potentially in that as well, you know, especially if you're shouting dinner that particular week. So I think that's a really important part of growing your coaching team, is spending time off the pitch together. And then ultimately you become friends as a result of it. You're not just kind of co-coaches or something, you know, an assistant coach or head coach. You become really good friends, and that's a thing that's something I'm really big on, and it's absolutely massive for, you know, your team dynamic and your team environment.
Yeah, cool. And yeah, that would be that would once again fuel all my biases around us having mac and cheese together and
tuna. Hell yeah! Something
that I just wrote down and I just wanted to explore a bit because it's been in the news over here recently is the stuff around weight restrictions and you'll probably be aware we've got a half game rule coming in as well, which has created a storm in a teacup. What type of things have you seen over in New Zealand and what do you notice, what's been having success?
Sure, yeah. So just to explain the weight restricted setup here. So we have grade rugby and then high school. So for example, here at King's, we've got seventh grade, which is under 50 kilograms. We've got sixth grade, which is 60 kilograms. Fifth grade, which is 70 kilograms, and then a new grade this year is going to be called 1R, which is first 15 restricted, which is going to be under 85 kilograms. So a lot of people look at that and they say, oh man, that's an amazing system to have, especially in the UK, because I've been following some of the tweets and stuff and see a lot on social media and people saying, oh, that would solve the problem and around health and safety. But ultimately, that's the main reason that they've got it here is health and safety, and it's because of what I was talking about earlier on with the Polynesian influence. So you might have two kids that are 14 years old, but one weighs 100 kilograms and the other weighs 60. So they're the same age, they're in the same class at school, but they're massively different from a size genetic maturation point of view. And so to play them in the same game or against each other potentially, then there's a massive health and safety consideration. So that's why they play grade rugby. But it's got a huge amount of problems because those two best mates, one who's 100 kilograms and the other who's 60, they don't get to play in the same team. And as we know, you know, the kids want to go and they want to play with their mates. So that's one of the big reasons that kids play sport. So
and the flip side of that, so I'm always comparing, when I see the weights come up, I'm comparing their weights to me. So Ardie Sevilla is about 10 kilos lighter than me. It actually wouldn't be safe for me to play against Ardie Sevilla. So once again, weight is also, whilst it's definitely a measure, it can also be a bit of a crude measure. So I've seen, you know, there'll be some kids that are, two kids that are at 80 kilos that, well, one's really powerful and the other one is a little bit more sedentary. So that, I guess it's quite a blunt tool, but I kind of get the understanding of it. I understand
100%.
The intent 100%. Behind it.
And yeah, so, and I think
is it going to continue to happen over there? How are they then adapting it? Is there areas where you can go, well, actually this kid is safe to play with these kids and he wants to be with his mates?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, that's still part of the problem. Whilst we have that grade rugby, we also have open rugby. So you can be any weight, any age, and you can play as long as you're deemed good enough. So, for example, our first 15, our second 15, and our under 15s is open weight. So you can be any weight. Right. So, you know, in our first 15, we've got, for example, year 13s, which is the equivalent of upper sixth. And then we've got year 10s, who are the equivalent of an under 15 kind of player. So we've got a big age group. Yeah. So, but because if they're deemed good enough, then they're good enough. And then you go and you play and it's just, you know, they just go for it. And it's down then to their skills and their fitness and everything that comes with it. But to go back to the kind of some of the challenges that they have, if you think about that, you're playing the weight grade rugby and you might be in the 70 kilogram team. One player might be a year 13, so that upper six, so he might be 17, 18 years old, but you might be playing with a kid who's 14.
Wow.
So from a skill level point of view and from a even just a social interaction point of view, then that's really, really hard for those group of guys to become a team, because, you know, teenage boys, you know how, you know, working with them so closely, you know, that maturity level is a massive difference between them. So that's why Auckland in particular is having a massive dropout at schoolboy rugby level, is because they don't get to play with their mates depending on what weight they are. So it's a massive challenge.
Yeah, my suggestion would be around having some stuff, so even the big kids would benefit. So talk a lot about it, but I played a Baffo boys game and I wore a red bib and I couldn't tackle or be tackled. So sure, some kids would benefit from that. And sometimes that might be the big kid, but you probably might want to speak to the big kid's parents and also explain the intent of, actually, this is about developing your skill. But I think it's a good measure. There's lots of other stuff. Do you have half a game over there yet? So half a game rule?
Yeah, that is meant to be, and I say meant to be, a rule, because not every coach or not every school abides by that rule. And I'll tell you the reason as to why, and it's the same as the challenge back home, is every team and every coach and every school wants to win. And that's, you know, it comes to it where they're like, oh, we've got to make substitutions. Oh, but hold on, the game's really tight here. If we put him on, we're going to lose. And so, again, you know, when we think about, oh, New Zealand are producing all these great players and, you know, the systems must be really good. But actually, a lot of the kind of issues in and around, you know, win first, develop later, you know, that kind of, you know, we're all about winning. That's actually really prominent here.
Yeah.
So, and it's a massive challenge. And ultimately, you know, for example, the last week of term there, probably about 3 weeks ago, I had a parents meeting where I tried to sit down with we had about 80 parents in the room, and we tried to explain that we've got performance teams within the college, which is the first 15, and then we've got development teams and we've got participation teams. And if your son is playing in a development or a participation grade, then it's not going to be about winning. So we are going to rotate our players. We're going to make sure that we stick to the half game rule. We're going to make sure that, you know, that we're developing these players and skill sets and fitness for the future. It's not going to be all about winning. And that was a massive debate in and around me and the parents about how we were going to move forward with that.
Wow, yeah, that's cool that you're going to have those conversations with parents. Interesting. What next? What next for Dave Ross? What's the next 12 months? What are you thinking? What are you getting excited about?
Well, I'm also, not something we've talked about yet, but I'm also the head coach of the Auckland Sevens team.
Wasn't your job title, weren't you elite head coach of the Auckland Sevens?
Thanks, yeah. Kick me square in the nuts on that one. Yeah, I deserve it though, so that's all right. So head coach there. So what we're kind of involved in just now is I'm doing some specialist coaching with Auckland as a halfback coach or scrum half coach. Now that we're Northern Hemisphere again, so I'm doing kind of weekly scrum half sessions with the academy and wider Might of 10 squad players. So that's been really good, challenging, because you know, we've got guys who haven't really been coached much in scrum half play. So we're getting quite a lot of good level of detail in with those lads. And then we will be rocking into Auckland Sevens season. We'll be coming up pretty quick. So we'll have a series of tournaments, selection tournaments, and then we'll play regionals, which will seed us for the national tournament, which is the highlight of the event. So last year we went there and we won the bowl competition, which was good considering the kind of squad that we had. We had a really young squad and an inexperienced squad. We did really well, but we obviously, from an Auckland point of view, Auckland's got a huge tradition and history in the game. So we will definitely be looking at trying to improve our finish at the tournament.
Nice. Basically, you need to go and win it, otherwise someone else will get it.
Well, yeah. Exactly. Well, actually, a good share of a good experience from last year is Joe Revovo played for us last year for Auckland.
And you didn't win? Sorry, yeah. You had Joe Revovo in your team, who is a rock star, and you didn't.
An absolute rock star.
He's ridiculous, isn't he?
He's a bit of a freak, to be honest with you. He's 6 foot five. I think he's sub 11 seconds for the 100. He is made out of granite. He is absolutely shredded. And I think pretty much the game plan changed to give the ball to Joe. That was pretty much the game plan. He was phenomenal for us in terms of, you know, when he got the ball, he either scored or created a score, which was great. But he also got sin binned in the semi-final and the final of the bowl for throwing the ball away, which is a big no-no in sevens, which is an instant yellow card. What an absolute experience it was getting to work with him.
Yeah, and just standing on the sideline shouting, Pastor Joe! Pastor Joe!
And the good thing is, everyone can, with my Scottish accent, everyone can hear me as well. So,
So the ginger hair made it clear who was the person shouting.
It was probably more the sunburn, to be honest with you, mate. Because, So rocking into that, and that's a good thing about working closely with the Auckland setup and the Mitre 10 group and stuff, is that we'll be able to, you know, hopefully select a stronger team as a result of, you know, me working closely with that group of players this year throughout the club season. And when we get to seven season, we'll have better relationships to be able to call upon the better players for this year.
Mate, if ever there was an advertisement for going over and spending a month on a course in Switzerland, you are the man. So, I mean... Amazing.
Hey, listen, you're gonna have to explain something to you. I've totally missed why you're calling me Switzerland.
You talk about the All Blacks in New Zealand all the time, then it becomes this big thing. If you depower them and call them Switzerland, who are a very peaceful nation, who aren't that good at rugby, with due respect to Switzerland, I don't think they've won the last two World Cups, then it doesn't become this thing.
Okay. I hear you. I hear you.
And I speak to lots of coaches who you know, would love to not have their other job. I was speaking to one last night, I won't mention his name, otherwise he would move off. And would love to be doing what you're doing. So, mate, I'm super jealous. If I didn't have a wife and kids...
Well, you have every conversation I've had with you over the last year, you've said... to be every single time, when you coach the All Blacks, can I be your assistant coach?
It's a deal.
It is a deal, 100%. Yeah. And having me on the pod as well. Because I did say to you, I was like, no one's going to care what a ginger Scotsman's got to say. But, you know, you've convinced me otherwise. But hey, listen, we can't finish without... I've got to do my top five sports moves.
I haven't done... I've still got questions to you, Sam. That's what I'm about to do.
Oh, jeez. All right. We're still going happy days.
So these are questions specifically for elite... Scottish. So we're going to go one word answers. So we're going to do that. And the top five movies is one of the questions. So you're allowed five answers for that. So I'm just going to hit you with words and you're going to have to give me one word answers. Switzerland. New Zealand.
Awesome.
Scotland.
Improving.
Clark Laidlaw.
Swearer.
I've no idea what that means.
He swears a lot.
Yeah. Scott Robertson.
Razor Ray.
No, that's cool.
It's not quite one word, but that's all you can say when you think about Scott.
Magic Academy.
Inspirational.
Right, we'll have that. Coaches Social.
Essential.
Sevens.
Jouer.
Fifteens.
Structure.
Yeah, interesting. Clarkey said too complicated. All right, let's go. Top five sports movies. I'll try and do my top five as well. So you do one, I'll do one.
Okay, we'll go for number... Well, I've got them in ranking order.
Have you? I'm
of
just...
Of course I have.
Keeping them off the top of my head. Come on, then. Top five.
Right, first of all, we've got to set the criteria. You're not allowed any boxing or martial arts in the sports movies. No boxing or martial arts. So that obviously rules out a lot of good movies like Rocky, Creed, etc. Creed is good if you've not seen it, by the way.
I haven't seen Creed.
Yeah, it's good. I've just got man envy because the guy Michael B. Jordan, the main actor in it, is just absolutely cut up. So, yeah, he's in good shape, that kid. Right, so I'm going to go number five, Happy Gilmore.
Happy Gilmore's in my top five, so I'm with you, Happy Gilmore. You are correct. Well done.
It's all in the hips, just remember that. Number four is a movie that you might not have heard of, and I would recommend 100%. It's called Rudy.
Rudy. How do you spell that?
Rudy. R-U-D-Y. Rudy.
I have heard of it, but I've heard some people recommend it, but I have not watched it.
Sure. It's a true story about a kid trying to play football, American football, for Notre Dame College.
Okay.
And it's got Sean Austin in it, who I believe is in Lord of the Rings, all that sort of stuff.
I feel like I'm in 2019 at the moment.
Yeah, this is an elite review that you're getting here.
I'm going for, and I'm not letting you talk any more about that movie. I can't remember what the movie's called, but it's about the American Samoa football team.
Oh, pass, I don't know. Oh, is that the We Are Warriors or something? No?
We Are Something, yeah. While you're doing the next one, I'm Googling it.
Yeah, I think it might be We Are Warriors. I'm not too sure. Okay. Any Given Sunday.
Yeah.
American football.
That's strong. And I'm going to go for a movie that's very similar to that. I'm going for Dodgeball. Next Goal Wins. Next Goal Wins is what it was. Is what it was called. Next Goal Wins is a beautiful movie.
Oh, okay, I'll write that down. Actually, I've not seen that. So yeah,
what?
But yeah, Dodgeball is a very, very good movie. There's a lot of comedy sports movies that I've had to leave out because the top three are too good. But yeah, that's a good one.
Well, what's next? What's next?
Number two we're on is Coach Carter.
Coach Carter, strong. I am going for Joint, White Men Can't Jump, and Bend It Like Beckham.
Jeez, White Men Can't Jump is definitely one of my good movies. I do enjoy that. Bend It Like Beckham, not so much. Okay, number one, right, here is number one, in my opinion, top sports movies, Remember the Titans.
Not seen it.
Mate, come on. I don't know if we can be friends anymore.
I am tempted to go for Space Jam, but I'm not going to. I'm not going to go for a movie. I'm going to go for the Netflix series, Sunderland Till I Die, is the best sporting thing on a screen I've ever seen.
Okay, yeah. I'll get that a watch. I've heard it's good.
You've not watched it?
Nah. I'm not a massive football fan, mate.
You don't need to be a football fan. You don't need to be a football fan, trust me.
Since we're talking about greatest things that we've ever seen on TV, did you watch Game of Thrones the other day?
I do not watch it. I've never seen an episode. But people were talking about it yesterday, and they were talking about Line of Duty, neither of which I've seen. So.
Yeah, we're definitely going to not talk capitalists. So, yeah.
first dates for me. Mate, look, it's been an absolute pleasure. I've loved it. We should definitely do it again. Once you get a couple more months into your season and hear about what's going on in your world.
Yeah, 100%, mate. I really appreciate it. As I say, I wasn't really believing you that I had anything interesting to say. So fingers crossed that if the podcast guys have a listen, they've had half an hour, 40 minutes of entertainment, if nothing else.
Cool, mate. We'll catch you up soon.
Awesome. Top man, Rossi.
Bye.